Support for Newsworthy comes from Inlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at Inlivion.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Wednesday, April 16th, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. If you spaced out and forgot that Tuesday, April 15th was tax day, you've got a bit of a reprieve. All North Carolinians get an extension because of Hurricane Helene. Both the federal government and the state are giving North Carolina residents until May 1st to file their taxes this year. However, if you owe the federal government money, interest began accruing yesterday, unless you live in one of the western North Carolina counties that received a disaster declaration following Hurricane Helene. The Internal Revenue Service made a change last week in how the Trump administration can use the tax records of certain undocumented immigrants. Julian Berger has more on how this could impact local undocumented taxpayers.
The IRS is now allowed to share the personal tax information of undocumented immigrants who are under criminal investigation with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That includes undocumented immigrants who have an order of removal. Around 11 million undocumented people are living in the U.S., and more than 160,000 removal orders were issued in the first 2 months of this year. Some undocumented immigrants are now fearful, but UpMortgage's William Caballero says it's important to continue filing.
I'm still advising clients to do the right thing because today they might be undocumented, but they might want to fix their immigration status later on. And something that immigration is going to be looking at is looking to see if you did the right thing while you were here.
Undocumented immigrants paid over $96 billion in 2022 in federal, state, and local taxes, with over $690 million of that going to state and local taxes in North Carolina. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
North Carolina will shift another $700 million in funding to Helene response under a budget proposal from Senate Republicans. If the budget passes, it would bring the state's dedicated Helene reserves to more than $2 billion. Senator Ralph Heiss, a Mitchell County Republican, says the General Assembly also expects another funding request from Governor Josh Stein.
We remain hopeful that the federal government will provide increased and expedited reimbursements, but we must prepare to fend for ourselves. Additionally, this budget also directs various state agencies to prioritize Helene-impacted counties for the consideration of certain grant programs during the biennium.
Those grant programs include school construction and parks funds. The budget also shifts more than $630 million in transportation funds to focus on the rebuilding of western North Carolina's roads. Senate committees are considering the budget this week. It must also pass the House before being sent to the governor. President Donald Trump's Department of Government Efficiency wants money back that Congress approved for humanities organizations, including those in South Carolina. The state newspaper reports that earlier this month, the federal agency revoked the majority of the $65 million promised to state humanities organizations by Congress in 2025. In all, DOGE told the National Endowment for the Humanities to, quote, claw back $175 million from its budget of just over $200 million. The South Carolina Humanities Council received a letter earlier this month informing it that the federal dollars it had been promised were being revoked. SC Humanities was set to receive just over $1 million in federal support this year. At the point those grants were canceled, the nonprofit was still owed more than $600,000 for programs and basic operating costs. A judge has blocked a newly appointed Cabarrus County commissioner from taking a seat on the board. Judge Stephen Warren issued a 10-day temporary restraining order Tuesday, saying Chairman Chris Miesmer had not yet resigned from his seat before commissioners held a meeting to name his replacement. The board voted 3-0 to appoint Lamari Austin Stripling. Miesmer voted present during the commissioners' meeting, which counted as an affirmative vote, according to state and county rules. Two other county commissioners did not attend the early morning meeting on April 10th. Miesmer was officially sworn in this week to replace State Senator Paul Newton. The restraining order remains in effect until April 25th. An international textile company has notified North Carolina officials that it plans to close its local facility in Kings Mountain, laying off 173 employees. The Charlotte Business Journal reports Patrick Yarn Mills, part of the Coates Group of London, is closing its plant on York Road. The plant is just off I-85 in Cleveland County, about 30 miles west of Charlotte. Employee separations are scheduled to happen in four phases, starting May 31st and wrapping up by the end of the year. Charlotte home prices were up in March, according to an online real estate marketplace. Kenneth Lee has more.
The median home price jumped up to $385,000, which is a nearly 3% increase compared to the same time last year, according to Homes.com. The real estate marketplace also noted that prices in Charlotte jumped faster than the national average. The average median price nationwide grew by 2.2%, or by $8,000, compared to the same time last year. On average, homes nationwide sold last month for $380,000. The growth rate last month places Charlotte as 24th in the nation in price growth among the 40 largest U.S. cities. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
An ambitious project is underway to build one of the largest children's hospitals in the country, somewhere in the North Carolina Triangle. It's a partnership between UNC and Duke University's health systems. Senate Republican leader Phil Berger said the state can do more to help.
Those systems are going to build North Carolina's first freestanding children's hospital.
A budget proposal revealed Monday proposes upping state government investment to $855 million. The town of Matthews has named James Avens Jr. as the next chief of Matthews Police Department. Avens Jr. brings more than 23 years of law enforcement experience to the role, most recently as interim chief of the Elizabeth City Police Department, following 6 years as the department's deputy chief. Interim Chief Penny Dunn will conclude her time with the town of Matthews, and Chief Avens will begin his role on June 2nd. American Airlines and AT&T will combine efforts to provide free in-flight Wi-Fi on about 90% of its planes beginning in January. The airline said it also plans to fit 500 of its regional aircraft with high-speed Wi-Fi by the end of the year. American operates roughly 90% of all flights at Charlotte Douglas International Airport. Over the last few years, the conservative parental rights movement has thrust public schools into the center of debates over hot-button issues like censorship, gender, and race. Laws like North Carolina's Parents' Bill of Rights illustrate how the movement has made inroads in driving education policy. But the North Carolina Values Coalition's Mama Bear workshops show how some involved in the movement believe that work isn't done. For more, education reporter James Farrell spoke to our Marshall Terry.
James, what is a Mama Bear workshop?
So these events are not open to the press, so I wasn't able to go to the one at the end of March, but I did get the opportunity to talk about it with Tammy Fitzgerald, who's the executive director of the NC Values Coalition. The Mama Bear workshop started around 4 years ago, and Fitzgerald says they were created to, in her words, inform parents of books that might be found in schools or included in curriculum that the group believes are obscene, inappropriate, or that indoctrinate students to a particular viewpoint. The events also aim to teach parents how they can push back on these instructional materials that they find concerning.
What kind of strategies do they teach parents?
Fitzgerald told me they encourage families to start small, to voice concerns with a teacher, and then work up the ladder to principal, superintendent, and ultimately up to the school board. But a big part of it, she says, is teaching parents how to find concerning content. Here's Fitzgerald.
But we're also talking to them about how to find the bad books in the libraries. And what titles to look for, what things to look for in the books.
Fitzgerald argues that many parents aren't aware of the kinds of books their kids are reading in schools, and this group encourages them to take a more hands-on approach in dictating that. She told me they also encourage parents to use public records requests to review student curriculums.
Got it. But when we talk about these bad books and obscenities and indoctrination, what exactly does the group mean by that?
Of course, this is at the heart of what can make the parental rights movement divisive. We've seen this manifest in laws like North Carolina's Parents' Bill of Rights. That law requires districts to set up processes for parents to review whether books are appropriate for schools. Critics say those policies lead to, quote, book banning or censorship. Fitzgerald says NC Values opposes overly sexual content in books at schools, but they also oppose teaching about things like gender identity or sexuality, claiming many parents don't want their children learning about this and that schools are doing it against parental wishes. But many in the LGBTQ community have said this focus on treating gender identity or sexuality as something, quote, obscene, ends up ostracizing LGBTQ youth.
You mentioned the Parents' Bill of Rights. We also have a presidential administration that has been friendly to this movement. How have the parental rights movement and these Mama Bear workshops changed as these policies become more entrenched in our state's educational system?
So I asked Fitzgerald about that, and I specifically asked if she felt the Parents' Bill of Rights was doing what they'd hoped it would accomplish. Here's what she told me.
If all the schools would implement the law, it would be working. But we only have less than half of the schools in the state that have actually implemented everything in the law.
So she said there's been more of a focus on enforcement as of late. One of the things discussed at this latest Mama Bear workshop was legislation that the group supports, including a new state house bill that would allow parents to sue school districts they feel are ducking the law and that sets some new rules for what's allowed in school libraries.
What else can you tell us about this latest Mama Bear workshop?
So a write-up of the event on the NC Values website shows school board members from Catawba and Henderson County Schools were in attendance, along with Republican State Representative Jennifer Balcom. There were several speakers, including a representative of the Conservative Heritage Foundation, and Fitzgerald told me there was a group who set up a table with examples of so-called bad books that they said were commonly found in North Carolina schools.
All right, that's WFAE's education reporter, James Farrell. Thank you.
Thanks.
A group of local poets last week performed a spoken word album highlighting Charlotte's Black history. Elvis Meniese was there and has this report.
Inside the Carolina Theater in Uptown, people scan tickets and walk through metal detectors.
You just want to get your tickets ready. There is no re-entry once in.
Warren McCall stands in the lobby with his wife. He says he's here for two reasons.
Just learning exactly where Charlotte came from and see what the culture was back then.
Our seats are on this level.
As some people find their seats, others hold their phones in the air, waiting to capture the performance, titled Black Charlotte, a poetic celebration of place and folk. The performance features 11 of 15 local poets who recorded an album exploring Charlotte's Black history, from gentrification to integration and social justice. One of the first poets to take to the mic is Josh Smalls. His piece focuses on Dorothy Counts, who at 15 years old was one of the first Black students to desegregate schools in Charlotte and North Carolina.
1957, a little brown girl made headlines. And I suppose the weather played good that day because hooded shirts never met the pictures. Her assignment was simple. No escorts. I should never meet the pavement. Baby girl, you are inferior to no one. Her destination, Hardin High School.
Small says he wrote the piece to show Count's bravery as she walked into the school, her head held high past jeering teenagers who threw rocks and spat. Someone even fired a blank cartridge.
To take those steps and tell people, listen, hey, I'm going to make this work. And then have crowds of not just children, but grown folks telling her, you don't belong here. I don't care if they say you can walk here, right? I don't care if you feel that you're equal and allowed to be here. This is not a road for you.
Small's performance wrapped up with rounds of applause and an acknowledgement.
Ms. Counts is in the building, but I can't see her. But can we give a round of applause for Ms. Counts?
Jay Ward is one of the poets and helped curate the event. He says the goal of the album and show is
to teach people who say that Charlotte doesn't have culture or who say that Charlotte doesn't have history. This is exposing the deep cultural history of Charlotte through its Black neighborhoods, through its Black communities and Black folk.
His poem touched on the destruction of Black communities like the Brooklyn neighborhood, a thriving Black neighborhood in Uptown demolished in the 1960s in the name of urban renewal. Another poem by Kalik Morales, otherwise known as Mr. Witz, the poet, explored the 2016 riots and protests in Charlotte after the police killing of Keith Lamont Scott.
The newspaper read, Charlotte police protest. Governor declares state of emergency as violence erupts for the second evening.
The incident led to hundreds of people taking to the streets and confronting police dressed in riot gear who fired tear gas.
The protest was meant to be peaceful, unarmed people petitioning against injustice. No justice, no peace. Justice for Keith and Harmony stretched across the traffic.
The officer involved, Brantley Vinson, faced no charges. Witt says his poem is a way to ensure history doesn't repeat itself.
There has been a lot of modern day lynchings, and it's hard to bear witness to an out day and time. And you could imagine what the families go through. So the way that we keep each other alive is by speaking on these injustices and trying our best to right them so that they don't continue to reoccur.
Dr. Lisa Santiago McNeil has been in Charlotte for over 25 years and left the theater pleased with what she heard. She says the show shines a light on Black history at a time when she feels that history is under threat.
They're trying to erase the Blackness from the history, from American history, from Charlotte history, from all the history. And without African American history, none of these things would be.
And that's why the poets say the album and show is a love letter to Charlotte, one that captures resilience, unity, and difficult historical moments that have helped shape the city. Elvis Meneyese, WFAE News.
Support for WFAE's local news coverage comes from Habitat for Humanity of the Charlotte region. And for Wednesday, April 16th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.